This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. I'm here live at AdTech New York, and I'm with Richard Jolichandra. Richard is the president and CEO of Technorati Media. He's been a friend of mine for a few years now. And yesterday he gave a report on the blogosphere, and we're going to talk about that as well as you know, many, many different fun things. So welcome, Richard.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
It's good to have you here.
It's good to see you again.
Well, and what I really appreciate is that apparently your employees hijacked you last night, took you out, and made you drink way too much, and you're still here representing.
Yes, I did get kidnapped, and it was actually a very great bonding experience. We actually got some business done, too, but by the end of the night, it was really fun to just be with my team.
Well, you know, that's the whole thing. You've got to come together at events like this. We've got to see each other face-to-face, you know, belly-to-belly, touch each other, and make sure we're still not completely virtual anymore, you know?
Well, it's also really great because I've got offices in San Francisco, New York, and LA, and having multiple city people together was fantastic because they like to get to know each other as well.
Absolutely. It's the best thing. So you've really transformed Technorati since you were brought in to take it to the next level. It wasn't flourishing. Let's be nice here, and it is
nice
now.
things are going well.
So you've transformed it from what we thought about Technorati as being a website about blog metrics and how to find bloggers and things like that to a social media network, right? And it's a social ad network now. So I want you to tell me a little bit about that, and then I really want to hear about the blogosphere report that you put together, some of the key findings. So just give us an update on what's happening at Technorati.
Sure. So Technorati.com was the first blog search engine and directory and one of the early Web 2.0 pioneers, and it still is. So I'm absolutely thrilled with that. But one of the things that I'd done over the last 10 years, I'd studied the ad network space pretty carefully. I always thought that Technorati.com would be a very good vehicle and a central point of starting a social media ad network. And that's kind of exactly, you know, what my investment thesis was for coming into the job. And the business plan that I wrote in the first month, we've almost executed almost to a T. So, but that's really it. I mean, I thought that it would be a great center point because of its relationship with social media content creators. And that absolutely proved true. When we launched the network, we didn't do any marketing or PR or anything. Michael Arrington at TechCrunch wrote one article saying Technorati was starting an ad network, and we had 11,000 applications to join within 6 weeks.
Nice. It's nice to hear when things are a good idea and they work and it's not so painful. Let me ask you a question.
Well, it was painful.
It probably was. Really, 11,000.
Startups are never easy, Susan. You talk to everybody you know.
It's true.
It's getting easier, though.
Let me ask you about let's deconstruct social media ad network. Are you talking about ads on social sites, or are you talking about social style ad units on sites, or both?
Yes, both. Thank you for that's a great lead-in.
Yeah, it's a distinction that needs to be made.
Right.
So explain both sides of that
for
us.
So we represent social media sites, but we also have social ads that we run on mainstream sites. So we're all about, like I said, putting viral, socially engaging ads in front of the consumers wherever they are, whether they're on a social media site or on any site for that matter. So it works out pretty well. You can bring a social experience to the audience wherever they are.
So give us an example of some social ads, as in social ad format, that you particularly like. And you probably like the ones that work. So let's maybe make that assumption that the things you're going to tell me aren't just things that you think are cute, but actually are effective. What is the story of that?
Technorati, we have something called a conversational media ad. Internally, we affectionately call them CMADs for short. And what they are is we use our blog search technology. Originally, we used our blog search technology to target conversations that a brand wanted to be associated with, pulled in the content into an ad, and then actually would send those ads actually will send the traffic, if somebody clicks on them, to where those conversations are occurring. But increasingly...
Oh, okay, so it's, what is it, RSS that pulls in based on keywords into an ad
or
something like that?
Well, we're using our search technology.
Your search technology, of course.
We have, you know, search and crawler or whatever.
Okay.
But the key thing is that we're bringing a content experience, like a sponsored content experience, to a user or consumer wherever they are. And again, it could be on a social media site, it could be on, you know, any mainstream site as well. The interesting thing is we started this in 2007, and I'd like to say that, you know, imitation is the greatest form of flattery, because I think there's probably at least 20 companies that are doing similar type ads now. However, I like to think that we do ours as well or better than pretty much anybody out there.
So this conversational media ad, Steam ad, is this a unique ad format that a client has to have you create for them? Or is there some kind of you said there are other people who are doing this style of ad. Is there becoming a standard for this kind of ad?
I think it's still early on. I mean, a lot of people are innovating in this space. But again, we've grown from just bringing in blog content to tweets to any kind of social content. We've had video, audio. We've actually let people blog within the ad unit. I mean, we've done all kinds of things. We have about 25 standard templates that we'll use. And then there is some custom creative that's done. But essentially, you know, brand will just send us their assets. They'll tell us what kind of conversation or what kind of content is important to them that they want to associate their brand with, and then include that in the ad.
I like this idea of these conversational ads. Can you share a very specific example of one, just so that we get a better sense of it, and then tell us how you're measuring the response or the efficacy of those ads?
Sure.
For the customer?
Sure. So some of these ads are just, I mean, the best way to think of these is they're almost like distributed microsites. They are full content experiences. A really good example is what we did for Toyota 4Runner.
Okay.
In the ad, if you can visualize this in your head, think of six navigatable channels as you roll over each of the major things, like the activities associated with people that would want to, you know, drive an SUV, rock climbing, camping, mountain biking, these kinds of things. As you roll over, all the content in the ad dynamically updates. When you click on what's in the ad, so actually Toyota has some really nice social communities of their own. So if you clicked on something that was out of the Toyota community, you would go to the Toyota community. If you clicked out of something that was on, you know, from the blogosphere about one of those activities, you'd go to that blog. So it's actually a really great content experience. In terms of the metrics, these perform way better than a standard ad unit.
That's a pretty low bar.
Well, I mean, just to give you an idea, yeah. The click-through rates on these are 10 to 20x what a standard banner would be, or other rich media for that matter. Literally 10 to 20x. Our highest click-through rate ever, and I mean, this is the outlier, but I always love, you know, pounding the table and saying,
why not?
13%.
It's nice when you get a big outlier like that. It's directional.
Yes. And that was for a campaign that we did for Sony. Most of the campaigns are in the just under 1%.
Are there a lot of social ad networks out there? Do you have a lot of competition in that category?
Well, I think we were one of the first to jump into it.
So you have some scale compared to your competitors?
Absolutely.
But there are a lot, aren't
yes,
there?
Yes, to kind of give you an idea of the scale that we're operating at.
Yeah, good.
Our ads are seen by over 340 million people worldwide and over 165 million in the U.S. every month.
Okay.
So that's not even...
300 million a month.
Yes, and okay. I will make the distinction. That's not potential reach. That is people who are actually seeing
that's
our ads.
That's ad served.
Yes.
That's burgers flipped.
Yes, that's burgers flipped.
Yep.
And... about 5 billion ads a month.
Okay. So there's some serious scale there. I've got this idea in my head from things that I've picked up and heard that ads on social sites don't perform. Obviously, you're finding that they do and that certain styles of ads perform best. What kind of information can you give me about that?
Well, I think in our network, the ads actually perform better than traditional sites. And think about the kind of sites that are in our network.
Yeah, right.
So we're not
like
just blogs. We're kind of like split down the middle between blogs and then niche social networks. So blogs, first off, I think perform incredibly well because they're generally subject-focused. They're usually experts and influencers. And the content is actually similar to mainstream editorial content. And you're framing that content with an ad experience the same way that, you know, traditional publishers have been doing for 150 years plus. The niche social networks, are vastly different than like the Facebook environment or the MySpace environment, in that they're usually subject or activity or interest based. And they're not, you know, a niche social network certainly isn't reaching 500 million people like Facebook, but some of them, you know, might be 500,000 uniques to a couple million uniques. Mm-hmm. And so they actually do perform pretty well. It's not the same kind of environment.
Okay. I want to think about this for a second. And what do I want to know the most about this right now? So you've got an ad network. You've got some interesting new ad units. You're getting scale. You're finding performance. You're working with big brands. Where do you go from here? What's on your you're an executor. Are you a past, sure, present, or future?
You know, that's a good question. And
you have to take that quiz.
You asked that last time we saw each other. Yeah. And I don't know. I think, yeah, I need to, you know, go lay down on the couch and actually think about that.
Well, actually, the reason I asked you is because yesterday here at AdTech, I interviewed John Fury from Mindtime, uh-huh, Maps, and he'd been on Dishy Mix about a month ago or so. And the concept is that you have a perspective from which you manage your life and the world, and you might be oriented toward using past information, historical information, and data to project the future. You might be a real big future thinker who just is always thinking about the big picture. You could be somewhere in the middle. It sounds to me like, because you had a plan and you implemented, you might be a present to near future, you know, oriented person. And the way that you find out what you are is you go to mindtimemaps.com/start/adtech and you take the test. It's 18 questions. It takes 3 minutes.
Okay.
And you not only get your results about what kind of a person you are and how you approach life, but it also compares you to everyone else in ad tech that's
really
taken the survey. So you can see kind of where you fall within the industry. Which is kind of interesting.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And as you were talking about that, I'm trying to think even more about where I'd fit into that. And I really don't know, because I have a little bit of nostalgia in me. I like thinking about, you know, things that have happened in the past. But I'm very much of a live in the moment person.
Me too.
You know, I spent a lot of time contemplating life and things while I was living in Asia. And, you know, I very much have that philosophy, and I tell all my employees, you better love who you're working with. That's as important as what your position and salary and all that is. Because I use the cliche all the time. You could walk out of the office and get hit by a UPS truck.
Poor UPS.
Poor UPS.
Brown take you down.
Brown take you down, exactly.
To the ground.
And so you just make sure that you're living and working with the people that you want to be with all the time. Because you can always find more money.
Well, it's interesting, too, because one of the points of knowing your mind, time, perspective, and the people with whom you work is that it gives you more compassion, because if they're just annoying you because they only ever do anything unless you have 10 data points, and you're like, but you can't, you see the big picture, you know, it gives you some compassion for why they're doing what they're doing, which,
sure,
I think is beneficial.
Sure.
Before we go to a break, just let's go back to my question. What was my question? It was something about social. It was something about the world.
Oh, where
of social.
Do we go?
Yeah, where do you go? That's exactly what it was. See, I'm not hungover, but it's definitely a 3-hour time change and a lot to be here. So, what was my question again?
Yes,
you're the professional interviewer. I forgot my question. I'm glad you remembered, man.
Well, I was going a whole bunch of places with that question.
We were going all over the place.
But, what I've really focused on this year, 2010,
yeah,
was executing the business.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get caught up in where, you know, the exit is or liquidity or whatever. And I learned long ago that the most important thing is just build the company and all that stuff will come to you.
Definitely.
And
that is good advice. That's wisdom right there.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think in Technorati's case, I mean, it was a bit of a turnaround effort and we were launching a new business model. So when we got through the recession, the Great Recession, it was really just like, let's focus and not even talk to anybody from a corporate development or funding raising or anything. We don't need any of that right now.
Yeah, put your head down and make money.
Put your head down, execute on the business,
yeah,
plan. We ended up profitable 7 months ahead of schedule.
Great. Good for you.
It's fantastic. And now, you know, all those opportunities are still there in 2011, which in my original plan, and again, there's the forward part of, you know, being an executive, you have to think forward.
Of course.
That was always in my plan, that's the time when you look up and look at where your opportunities are. make sure that you have some critical mass and some momentum and some success. And then you have the ability to kind of look around and see what the opportunities are.
All right. Well, that's sage advice. So let's go to a break. And when we come back, I really want to talk about the state of the blogosphere. This is a report that you unleashed here yesterday. I got to catch an early part of it, and it sounds really good. So we'll take a break. I'm with Richard Jolichandra, and he is the president and CEO of Technorati Media. And we'll be right back. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, live from AdTech New York City. The dream. You're a master interviewer, clear, confident, asking killer questions nobody else ever thought of. Guests swear it's their best interview ever as keen insights are revealed and your raving fans promote your work for you. The reality? Killer questions? You're even boring yourself. Your voice trembles, your palms sweat, and everyone can hear that bubble in your throat. Panic sets in when you think about asking an expert for an interview. Help is here! All you need is masterful interviews, creating profitable content, a system that turns your audience into raving fans who promote your work for you, and how to come up with those killer questions for riveting, profitable information products. Get it now at masterfulinterviews.com and download the free Easy Question Generator mini course today. Now get $100 off with promo code DISHY at masterfulinterviews.com. We're back with Richard Jolichandra. He's the president and CEO of Technorati Media. So before we went on break, we promised to talk about the report of the blogosphere, and I want to do that. And I loved how you started your presentation yesterday when you said, this is a question that everybody always asks me, how do I become a famous blogger?
And I do get asked that.
And you got to tell us. How do you answer it?
It's a very complicated, multi-step process. If you'd seen the end of the presentation, essentially what the step process is the first thing you need to do is you need to become famous. The second thing you need to do is you need to start blogging, and then you're a famous blogger. So there was a nice little shot of Kanye West on the screen and his blog post about how sorry he was to Taylor Swift's mom, and it got a pretty nice little laugh. So
I bet
that's
it.
It's easy to become a famous blogger.
How to become a wealthy vintner? You know,
yes.
You know,
yes.
You start out with a lot more money, right?
Exactly.
You end up with a little bit of money and some grapes.
By the way, Susan, I really want to become a wealthy vintner, so please, you know, continue to tell me how.
I'll do it. All right. So tell us about the state of the blogosphere. What are the key takeaways? Hit us with the top three things that are going to rock our world and change our life.
Well, I think it's important first to kind of like think about what we were studying. And we've done the state of the blogosphere now for years. Even before I got here, Dave Sifry, our founder, was collecting a whole bunch of stats and things about the blogosphere. His travel startup is actually going really well. And he's still very much involved with Technorati. He's the chairman of the board and provides me sage advice and insight all the time about all things social. But anyway, so the state of the blogosphere, like I said, we've been doing it for a number of years. And we started about 3 years ago doing some survey work and not just doing stats. And what we learned in 2008 was that more people were making money than we thought. And there was this professional class of bloggers that was much bigger than we thought it was. And so in 2009, that was the focus of the survey. And, it provided a lot of insight into how people were building mini media businesses, and some not so many, some actually massive. Last year we interviewed Michael Arrington and Ariana Huffington, and, the Huffington Post by any measure is not a small, business anymore. It's a giant business. Same thing with TechCrunch that was just acquired. But we wanted to go far beyond just the people who are the famous bloggers, so to speak, and learn about, the mom and pops that are doing it part-time and all that. So learned a tremendous amount on 2009. And if you're talking about a media business, it's really important to understand, well, how do brands fit into this? So the 2010 study was very much focused on how brands fit into this. And then we also focused on a subsector of the women's movement, sometimes affectionately misperceived as the mommy bloggers.
Yeah, I actually appreciated when you made that comment. I've never really liked that term, mommy bloggers. I'm a mother. And I blog, and it irks the shit out of me for some reason. It's kind of like if you're a mommy, it's not as good or something. I never thought it was a great moniker. And when I saw you put up on the slides, it's really the woman's movement, the blogging woman's movement. I thought, ah, my God, thank you. That feels so much better to me.
Well, and the data is actually really interesting. But again, first to your point, it's like, women blog, and not all of them are mothers, not all of them are married, and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on there. And in the survey, only 5% were actually truly mommy bloggers. And of that 5%, only 13% of them blogged solely on parenting. So, I mean, women blog about a whole bunch of other stuff, and the main things are the things that everybody does, and that's, news, entertainment, health and lifestyle, technology even, and so it's not just about parenting, but it is a really important category from a marketing perspective because, women make so many household buying decisions, so it is absolutely a critical, subsector of what's going on out there.
So what'd you find out about them?
Well, I mean, we're still compiling the data, and we're publishing the things on the site as we speak, literally. The first day of the state of the blogosphere was yesterday, and we have two more parts, one being today and another on Friday. In addition to the feature articles about, the analysis of the stats and all that, we have over a dozen interviews with prominent women bloggers. So some of them mommy bloggers, some of them just, female bloggers and what they blog about. And I think that's more the color commentary around some of the data. And it's very interesting because, half of them are video and some of them are text, and you actually can hear it in their own voice. Yesterday we published Charlene Lee, an interview with Charlene Lee, who's obviously very prominent, big in our industry, but also a very, she actually mommy blogs too.
Yeah, she does. It's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so give us more of the kind of bottom line metrics that are in the State of the Blogosphere report.
So this year, a couple of things that popped out to me. I mean, we have just basic, a lot of basic stats about, blogging behavior and activity. But again, the focus this year was like brands in the blogosphere. And some of the things that really popped out to me were, it's no secret that bloggers, write about brands and all that. But the one that always just really hits me is how many bloggers have been actually contacted by a brand representative, either the brand themselves or some agency. And it's literally like a quarter of all bloggers, but half of the professional bloggers have been reached out to by a brand. The more alarming statistic was that 64% of the bloggers who had been contacted by a brand said they were treated with disrespect or weren't treated very well. Only 20% of the bloggers contacted by a brand said that they were treated in a positive way.
So what does that mean, not treated well? A brand, a PR person called up the blogger and said, hey, can I send you a, six-pack of Dan and yogurt? And they didn't like the way they were approached, or what?
Well, it could be a number of things. That could be one of the things. But in general, when the whole marketing and outreach program is done, I mean, the New York Times gets a lot more respect than Mary Smith, who, is basically just an anonymous blogger or whatever. That's a big mistake. And I think brands, it doesn't really take a lot to just pay people basic respect. And the other thing that, comes out in the state of the blogosphere that's related to this is many of the professional bloggers have actually worked in mainstream media at some point.
Uh-huh.
So they know the way that people are getting treated and should be treated. And so if there's one huge takeaway for a brand, it's when you're doing PR outreach or advertising campaigns or whatever with bloggers, you really should just, you should treat them the same way you treat the New York Times.
Yeah. interesting to think about how sensitive bloggers are with regard to being approached. It's still early days for approaching bloggers to ask for coverage, for briefings, etc. And with that information, it's good to know that it's not working right yet, and we need to continue to have a good level of communication about how they want to be approached, what kind of support they need. Are they interested in this? If not, what are they interested in? All the normal things that apply to a journalist apply to a blogger, and we just need to keep learning that.
Well, I think it even goes beyond that,
Thank
Susan.
You. Please.
That's only looking at the PR outreach angle of it.
What am I thinking
It is becoming a mature media channel in general.
Uh-huh.
And that's, if there's one key takeaway from the whole thing, the penultimate point, is that the blogosphere has grown into a mature media channel. So the amount of advertising, for example, that is occurring in the blogosphere is dramatically increased over the last couple of years. There's a major increase year over year, over 50% increase in the number of ad tags seen in the blogosphere every year. And there are at least 6 or 7 major, you know, ad networks that either solely focus or have a prominent focus on the blogosphere. So there's a lot of advertising going on. So it's a combination of outreach, PR, you know, channel, but also a media channel as well that is really made it into this, what I call, mature media channel.
Where does someone go to get a copy of the report and to see all of these interviews?
Sure. So on technorati.com, you'll see the 3-part series, all feature articles. You'll see all the dozen interviews, and there's just a raft of Technorati search and index data as well.
And what are some of the things that a blogger can do to get more traffic to their blog now, to increase their visibility?
Well, that goes right back to the survey. We asked them what they're doing for traffic. The 3 most impactful things that they're doing are Facebook updating, Twittering, and registering at Technorati. I swear to God, that's actually
Of course, getting pingbacks or whatever there are. Yeah,
so we'll take that every time.
Yeah, and it's true. What you really are talking about is just syndication. You're talking about making sure that once you do a blog post, people know you did it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's so simple, but we forget to do it. We do a blog post and forget to do it. All right. So my final question for you is that one of the things that I know about you is that you've lived abroad for a considerable period of time, and in that time you've both had time where you've worked abroad and where you've taken time off. Just this summer, Tim and I took our daughter Taylor, and we wanted to live work in Kenya.
Wow.
And we'd done it in Holland, and that was really fun. And it wasn't good. It didn't work out for us. We loved being on safari. We loved visiting the country. But it was nigh on impossible, just from a bandwidth, from traffic, from getting around. It was just not the place to live and work. So Where did you live? Where did you work? I really want to know less. I actually really want to know less about your experience and more about your advice for other people who, you know, got hooked on the Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week business porn crack and think they want to do it. Well, you've actually done it.
Yes.
So give us some advice.
Yes. My first bit of advice, and I get asked this all the time when people hear I lived abroad for 10 years, didn't work for 4.5 of it, and traveled everywhere. They always ask, well, how do I do that? You know, how do I get a job overseas? And I say, don't get a job. Just go. That's the most important thing. Go. And if you decide you want to live somewhere, it'll work out. Especially, you know, a lot of the people that we hang out with are driven and ambitious, and you'll figure something out. I started an ad agency in Singapore, and I'd never worked in advertising. I just did it. And that's how I got into this whole business in the first place. But my best advice is just do it. Just go and be, because even if you don't get the job or whatever, you have a great experience, you know, living overseas. And even like in your example, if things don't work out the way that you hope they would, you still learn something and you get a very valuable experience. And I think the most important takeaway that I got from living overseas is it's almost like, you know, getting out of yourself and looking at, you know, the way you were raised and upbringing and all the thinking that was, funneled to you and all that. You think differently. And I learned, like, for example, just about the United States. I learned more about the United States while I was living out of the United States, but I also learned more about myself when I was, you know, forced to, acculturize, so to speak, and get outside myself.
Were you in your 30s when you did this?
I went when I was 28, mm-hmm. and I came back when I was 38.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really good time to go. I also think that your 30s are the time when, in general, you are starting to cast off the environmental teaching that you've got, you know, like what your parents taught you, what you learned from where you grew up, all those things. You start to really judge it all, you know, and I noticed that some of my younger friends are judgmental, and I thought about that for a while. I said, oh, that's just their learning process. They're just judging everything so they can decide what's really right for them now as they mature. And I think it's an awesome time to take a move like that because you're going to go through that anyway. You might as well go full out.
Sure, sure. And it's interesting you say that because when I left the U.S., mm-hmm. I was probably one of the most cynical, critical people that I knew. and then now, today, I'm very accepting of things and things that I would have criticized or been negative towards or whatever. I may still be critical or negative, but I pause and I take a long pause. And most of the time, I find that I'm actually not as negative or critical towards it as I would have been.
I have a real appreciation for the long pause.
Yes. And it won't be the last time I take a long pause.
I think we should probably take a couple of long pauses every day, don't you think?
Yes.
I know.
Yes, yes.
So
but
true.
I think you should also take long pauses in your life and yeah. not yes. wait to retire before you retire. Have those retirement periods where you have the chance to ponder and consider and enjoy your life as well.
Absolutely. Well, I have enjoyed learning more about your life, Richard.
Well, this has been fun. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. It's really good to see you again. I'm glad your business is going well.
Thank you.
I'm really happy about it, and I hope that people will get some good benefit from all the work I know you poured into your blogosphere report. So
great.
Awesome. All right. You got to meet Richard Jolichandra. He's the president and CEO of Technorati Media. And this is your host, Susan Bratton, here live at AdTech New York. I will connect with you soon. Have a great day, and thanks for listening in. Bye-bye.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.